Hello there, space fans and members of the spaceflight community. Robin here, chief of Supercluster and co-founder of Space Agency. We're back after a few weeks. We've been super busy doing updates to our app and publishing a few exclusives and working on our coverage for Starship orbital flight test, which is currently looking like next week. We've been following Elon's tweets on Twitter, and a few of our updates are coming from our sources and friends at SpaceX and other journalists and reporters covering the mission. It looks like April 17th might be the magic date. So we're all looking to travel down there and get ready for this huge mission. I think it's a really critical moment for NASA, for SpaceX, for the industry. We're all sort of waiting to see what Starship is capable of and how it could change things for the industry and help NASA realize their goals of getting humans back to the moon. I think since we've last taped a show, there's been so many things that's happened. NASA has announced the Artemis II astronauts. Congrats to that crew. Artemis II is going to be a slingshot around the moon. The current launch date, I think, is November 2024. Everyone's very excited. These astronauts will fly on the Orion crew capsule, launching on top of SLS for a 10-day mission that will fly around the moon. And it'll be the first time humans have gone that far since the Apollo program. Artemis II will set the stage for Artemis III, which will bring humans back to the moon's surface for the first time since Apollo 17 in 1972. So that really ties in to the Starship orbital flight test. Starship is the vehicle that is supposed to bring the crew from lunar orbit to the lunar surface, Orion being the capsule that brings the crew from Earth to lunar orbit. And then there's going to be a transfer between the two crew vehicles from Orion to Starship for that human landing system. We're all very excited about these missions. I think everything happening right now in the industry is all aiming towards, you know, deep space, toward the moon and everything else. We've had some other updates at Supercluster. We published our Tiangong, the Chinese space station tracker, on the Supercluster app, and it's been working really great. You know, check it out, update the Supercluster app or download the app if you don't have it, and check out the Chinese space station. You can see which crew is there, what vehicles are parked there. We are trying to include scheduling, and we are trying to track the China's astronauts' space flights. They've had a few in the last couple of months. They don't announce them or talk about them. We do hear from reporters tracking the Chinese space program, and sometimes we hear from Chinese state media. So we're doing our best to update the astronaut database for those astronauts and update their spacewalk times. It's always going to be, you know, vague, sometimes specific, but we feel that we have the best information that we can find out there. Eventually, we do get hard data down the line, and we'll obviously update the ADB accordingly. Apart from the Tiangong Space Station tracker, we have also launched the Space Station Viewer, which is a nifty little tool that will notify you if you opt in to let you know when the Chinese space station or the International Space Station is flying overhead. You could have the opportunity to view that passing. We've already tested the feature in Brooklyn and a couple other places, and it works really well depending on visibility. The app will notify you based on your location, and you can use the app to sort of figure out where to look, the pitch, the angle, the direction, of course. Yeah, try it out. Let us know if it works for you. Like I said, we've done a few tests and it's worked really, really well. So try out that new feature. And, you know, we're listening to our audience and listening to app users for what cool stuff they want as part of the suite of apps. And this is one of the things that has come up in the past. So we're happy to include it. And we're happy to always add more tracking features to our app as time goes on. On the publishing side, we've published two exclusives recently, both from writer David Brown. One is an interview with the director of the Falcon Fleet. Really eye-opening interview. You should check it out. And then we published a second interview. The first interview was with John Edwards, a SpaceX VP. And the second interview and feature is the director of Dragon Missions at SpaceX, Stuart Keach, for a really great interview about what they've learned from these Dragon crewed missions and what lessons they're taking from the Dragon program into the Starship program, what's been learned, what lessons have been you know, most important in building Starship and sort of the road that was paved by Dragon for Starship. It's a really interesting article. Please head over to supercluster.com to check out both of those features. Both articles have amazing photography from team members past and present. Falcon, Dragon, Starship, really good eye candy for these articles. So appreciate the writing, but also check out the incredible photography that accompanies our features. And we're really proud to take those photos ourselves and be able to include them. I wanted to shout out Chris Gebhardt, who's usually a guest on the show and has been on many, many times. He's been a contributor to Supercluster since day one. He's an incredible writer, incredible journalist, screenwriter, you name it. Chris does it all. He will no longer be on the show because he now works at SpaceX. So congrats, Chris. Congrats to SpaceX. That's a great hire. Who knows? Maybe we'll have Chris on the show again in the long future. Yeah, I look forward to seeing him around SpaceX when I'm in California. Good luck to you, buddy. I hope you're listening. We are tracking Starship, as I mentioned before. Elon has tweeted multiple times that it might be around 420 or next week. We've heard from our sources that the 17th is the working day. We've heard this for a while. Our team members, Eric Kuna, Devin, Jenny, myself, are all heading down to Starbase. Devin lives in Texas, but the rest of us do not. So we're planning to head down next weekend for full coverage. We're going to be shooting photography, video. We're going to hopefully be updating live, and we'll be updating our tracker. Jenny will be updating the launch times, liftoff times, windows, launch dates if they change. You know, check out the Supercluster app for that tracker. You can also access the web version of it on our website. Me here wrote the copy for the Starship tracker, and me here is also writing the coverage of the Starship orbital test flight. He's monitoring the mission from India and has been helping us behind the scenes track the mission and keep on top of everything. And also check out his Starship orbital flight test feature on supercluster.com. So yeah, we're all really excited for Starship. We also, our friends at Yuri's Night are having events. There was a really cool event in LA. There's going to be an event on April 15th down at Kennedy Space Center. Supercluster has always been a part of that. Everyone down there is a good friend of ours, Loretta Whitesides, and all the folks who put together that event. So this year, we won't be able to participate because of our responsibilities in covering Starship. You know, we'll be sharing stuff on our social media from the event or ways to buy tickets for the event and attend the event. I'd also like to shout out our friends at the Cosmic Perspective, Mary Liz and Ryan, who are getting married on April 15th. I'm sure they're going to be getting married and then rushing back to Starbase to cover the Starship launch. Their filmmaking and photography and just all the content they create around Starship and at Starbase is extraordinary. And you've definitely seen it. The video footage that they capture is iconic and historic and will definitely be reflected on many, many years from now. Wish them best for the wedding. I was invited, but I'm not going to be able to go. I love you both, and I'm sorry about that. I have been given some credit for introducing Ryan and Mary Liz. So, you know, hopefully that makes up for not being able to make it to the wedding down at Kennedy Space Center. I'm very happy for you both. And Cosmic Perspective has always been a good partner and friend of Supercluster. We've worked together in the past. So yeah, that brings us to our guest today, who, as I mentioned in the past, needs no introduction. Ashley Vance, the author of Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future, which has been out many years. It's sitting on everyone's bookshelf. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a very high percentage chance that you have Ashley Vance's Elon book on your bookshelf. I certainly do. Today, Ashley is a features writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. He has an awesome television show called Hello World, where he travels the world and finds really amazing and innovative tech stories. His next book has been highly anticipated. It drops in May, and it is called When the Heavens Went on Sale: The Misfits and Geniuses Racing to Put Space Within Reach. Ashley follows four space startups, Astra, Firefly, Planet Labs, and Rocket Lab. So if you're listening, you know all these companies. Supercluster tracks all their missions, all their tasks on our Supercluster app. And we've been talking about these folks for, you know, as long as we've existed. You know, I think Ashley can speak to the inner workings, the visions, the cowboy attitude of these startup founders. You know, like Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, you know, they the leaders of Virgin and Blue Origin. And you have Elon, of course, whose story we're all familiar with. But who are these new guys? I mean, how are they fitting into this new space world? And, you know, what are they trying to achieve? Are they achieving it? Are their companies doing well? Are they going to be, you know, crunched out? I feel like, you know, these last few weeks, we've all been disheartened with Virgin Orbit's collapse and their inability to raise money. Virgin Orbit has been a partner of Supercluster, very good partner. We're very sad, but we have to acknowledge what's happened. And I think that there's been amazing coverage from Joy Roulette at Reuters and Michael Sheets at CNBC talking about what's been going on. I think that it's worth unpacking whether making it to orbit or finding some success in your early missions and having great outreach and having a great brand and, you know, partnerships and a presence like Richard Branson and a leader like Richard Branson, is all that enough to stay alive in the new space industry? Are we seeing a bubble burst? Is Virgin Orbit's collapse a canary in the coal mine? We're going to be asking Ashley about this because he's the guy to ask. So we're going to go ahead and call Ashley in. Let's pick his brain a little bit. Hey there, Ashley. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It feels like a pretty critical week in space flight and in space history. We have this orbital Starship test coming up. We're all still, you know, reading stories about the collapse of Virgin Orbit. And, you know, I feel like a person like you, I follow you on Twitter, and I think that we're all trying to make sense of what's happening here. And I think this was a great time to have you on the show. Talk about your upcoming book that we mentioned, and talk about how you're viewing this time in history and what's your take on it. But first, I'm going to start with your book, because you track the early development of four parties in particular: Astra, Firefly, Planet Labs, and Rocket Lab. Now, our listeners and Supercluster followers are familiar with these companies and the fact that they're startups, and some of them burgeoning, some of them are not. But I'm going to start one by one. And, you know, I want you to first tell me, what was your motivation for following these companies and what's their story? You know, and I think I want to start with Astra, because Astra is going through it right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they are not doing well, and they're one of the companies that are central to your book, and, you know, they're in the news. So I guess my first question is, one, why did you start including Astra in your book, and what are your thoughts on what's going on with them today?
Yeah, well, I started this research years ago, and so when I pretty much, you know, I did the book on Elon, and one of my favorite parts of it always was the SpaceX reporting. And right. I just loved, in particular, the stories of the early days on Kwajalein and all this stuff that I didn't have a chance to witness firsthand because I wasn't covering the company then. And you're right, as the book was coming out, I went to visit Rocket Lab, and then there were all these other rocket companies and satellite companies appearing. And on a very just sort of selfish level, I was like, oh, I can kind of go see what it was like to make the right. Falcon 1 firsthand now. And Astra, I'd known Chris Kemp, the CEO and co-founder, for many, many years, dating back to when he was at NASA, and I had heard rumors that they were starting up. And so Chris and I just reached out, and I was like, look, man, I would love to see what it takes to make a rocket and follow it from day one. And to Chris's credit, he said, okay, you can follow everything we do. We just want to remain in stealth mode until we make our first orbital attempt, but you can see the good, the bad. I mean, he gave me complete access. You know, I was there the very first day the company started, when it was just five employees trying to get the engine to work for the first time, all the way up through their launches. And so, you know, to me, to your question, that's kind of how it evolved with me covering them. You know, I found them fascinating because, yes, they're going through some things, and it's totally, we'll have to see kind of where all this ends up. But on the one end, they just represent the most extreme attempt at rocket building, right? So quickest, fastest, cheapest, this as close as anyone. And it could be a bad theory. It could be a flawed theory. Right. You know, this is what they're trying to do is the sort of assembly line, a rocket every day version. And so anyway, for the purposes of my book, it just represented this chance to watch a rocket get made from whole cloth. And then also represented this very extreme end of the business.
Yeah. And Chris Kemp, you know, he's a personality. And
yeah. Well, that was the other bonus. It was right. The Chris Kemp show. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't think there's a soul in the space industry that doesn't know about your Elon book. But so getting in on day one on some of these startups was important to you because you felt like, well, I didn't get to do that with SpaceX to actually be there on the ground. And you wanted to with these companies. Let's talk a little bit about Firefly, because that's been quite a ride too, to see what's been going on with them. You and I both know Max, the Ukrainian. And so, you know, walk me through Firefly, because Firefly is seen as a success. How did you find out about what they were doing and, you know, what was your approach there for your book?
Yeah. You know, and I mean, I should point out, you mentioned, you know, I cover these four companies and it's probably more like four characters in some ways or groups of people. And each one is a little bit different. And so the Firefly story might not be what people are expecting. I mean, there is stuff about the rocket and building the company, but it is really a story about Max, you know, and kind of his journey and similar sort of thing. I was basically doing my day-to-day reporting for Bloomberg Businessweek magazine covering space and sort of thought I was going to do a book, but hadn't settled on who I would cover. And then I saw Firefly go bankrupt and then heard that this sort of mysterious Ukrainian guy who lived in Silicon Valley had bought it. And so I was like, I got to meet this guy, you know, and I reached out to a number of people and then finally got in touch. And then I'd say, I don't know, you know, reporters are never really, we're not really supposed to make friends with our subjects. And right. But I would say that Max and I got along from the beginning, even though he's quite a prickly character and I don't think really cares for journalists that much. But we got along well enough that he let me go on his journey. So theirs is interesting, right? Because you had Tom Markuzik as the CEO and he's really running the company. And then you had Max as the money. And then Max came from his family worked on the Soviet space program. And so he had this deep heritage and he came from this part of Ukraine that really specialized in building the Soviet rockets and some of their engines and satellites. And so I went on this crazy journey with him. I mean, I've been to Ukraine with Max. I've sat with him in his office in Silicon Valley probably like 50 times. We went to Texas. We went to Vandenberg. I mean, we really went at it. And as I was doing this story, it just got more exhilarating and exotic than I ever could have hoped. So, you know, obviously close space watchers probably know what happened, but this Ukrainian guy who puts 200 million plus into this bankrupt Texas rocket company and gets the rocket all the way to the pad ends up getting thrown out of the country by the United States government as I was
right
doing.
Before the war. I think it was a CFIUS, a military organization that tracks these kinds of things, flagged Firefly and flagged Max as an issue. I mean, that's just a surface level description of what happened, but a lot of drama. Max had to divest his stake in Firefly, and that's basically the last we heard of Max in relation to Firefly, right?
Yeah, it is, and it's just about as dramatic as a story can get, especially when you can imagine. I mean, Max is very wealthy, but he's not like Elon, Jeff Bezos, like just billions of dollars. Like 200 million, 250 million was a lot for him. He risked a lot. And basically, once the rocket looked like it was going to work, the US government more or less took it away. And Max is not somebody who bites his tongue. And so I've got like.
There was a few sketchy Facebook posts. There was. You know, Max reaches out to the media when he's angry.
And then I was sitting there behind the scenes the whole time, you know, talking to him on the phone all the time, meeting with him. And so I think people will find, I sort of thought in the book, you know, the story on Planet Labs is probably like the the idealistic kind of why are we doing this, and you know, a bit of like a genesis story on some of this, and the story on Rocket Lab is really like the, it's kind of the engineer's hero's journey through Peter Beck. I thought of Astra as kind of this, it's got a bit of comedy in there, mm-hmm. and then it's right. a bit of like a tone.
A little absurdity.
Right. You know, mm-hmm. that one, like, I feel like is the kind of weirder story, but it's also like this, it was meant to be kind of like a tome to engineering and all the, you know, it doesn't focus just on Chris, but all these people that their life stories that go into this. And then I thought a Firefly really is like a tragedy. And so each of these four sections, I sort of tried to write in a different way to, you know, reflect that mood, I guess.
That's really fascinating. Let's touch on Planet Labs now. This is a sort of not a rocket builder or a launcher. They're a provider and a satellite builder. And, you know, when I think of new space and I think of democratizing capabilities and using space technology to improve life and making space technology more accessible to more companies, more organizations, and everyday people, Planet Labs really falls in line with some of that line of thinking. And what I've seen from them is extraordinary so far. Their imagery, their coverage of like almost, you know, current events in a way. Maxar does the same thing, but I love the way Planet Labs does it. So Planet Labs and Astra, they were friends coming up, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of my favorite parts of the book. It's really what got me started on this in a lot of ways is there was this group, there was this guy named Pete Warden, who was a brigadier general in the Air Force. And he was an astrophysicist and through some weird turns of fate, ended up running NASA Ames in Silicon Valley and went out of his way to recruit a bunch of young, pretty, for lack of a better term, disruptive rebels of space, right. You know, trying to rethink how we do stuff and really push against the grain at NASA. And so both Planet and Astra come out of that, and all the people, the main figures at the companies were all really kind of best friends. And at one point all lived in basically a commune together in Silicon Valley.
Wow. That's amazing. I should add
just real quick, you know, just because sometimes we see Planet's images and they seem really cool and all that. I think people forget it. This is kind of like a point I try to make in the book, is just that, you know, SpaceX did this amazing stuff to bring the cost of launch down and to right. make commercial launch real and get the cadence up. But, you know, if there's any company that strikes me as actually bringing Moore's Law and modern computing and the idea of mass manufacturing satellites, you know, it was Planet. Like I think of them as much of a inciting incident as SpaceX in terms of rethinking, in terms of like really modernizing what happens in low Earth orbit. And that really is the rockets are always cool and so fun to watch and sexy, but it's like what we do up there that really matters. And, you know, they're the ones, they're kind of the reason there's like 150, 200 satellite startups now.
You know, at the end of the day, it's about the damn payload. we do talk about rockets a lot, and we do, you know, these are giant phallic penis looking things and we're all over them. And yes, and at the end of the day, it's about the thing that we need launched, and we always have to remind ourselves about that. I'm glad you mentioned that in your book, Ashley.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I suspect over time we'll just pay less and less attention to rockets as they become much more normal occurrences, and just all of the, you know, all of the really interesting stuff is going to be with the payloads.
Now, there's going to be, you know, a lot of analogies are made to the early dot-com boom and early internet. And, you know, I think Bezos is the one who likes to call the new space industry like the first days of the internet. He said that a few times. But this new frontier, you know, if we're comparing it to that, there's going to be a crunch and a downsizing to some degree to thin out the herd. Now, is that something do you see happening? Do you see, well, will four become two? You know, will six become three? You know, you cover, you know, in your book a handful of companies here. In the back of your head, do you know or do you think that some of these folks won't be around in a couple of years?
Yeah, although, you know, the massive question is like, is this real or not? Like, is this whole thing the beginning of something like the internet? And if so, if you believe that it is, then we are going to see this kind of like near-term culling of some of the rocket companies and probably some of the satellite companies, just because there's some who are ahead of others. There's some that got caught up in the SPAC stuff and their business case probably doesn't make a lot of sense anymore, all a variety of reasons. But if you believe, and I'm not saying I do, I'm curious to see how this all plays out. But if you believe this is the early days of the internet, we probably have some sort of retraction and then just this great expansion, you know, where maybe folks like SpaceX and Rocket Lab are still hanging around as sort of like the Apple and IBM. And then you get the Dells and the Compaqs and you know, everybody else coming when they take another crack at this and figure out all the economics. So, but that's why I find this all so fascinating. It's like there's this belief that this is the start of something like a internet. And I can really see that case. And many days I do totally believe it, but it's really going to require somebody coming up with ideas beyond communications and imaging and some science. You know, I mean, you really have to get like the manufacturing stuff to work and some whole new avenues.
Right. That is interesting. And like you said, there was a few bumpy, I feel like there was a start, a stop, a start and stop when you talk about the internet becoming what it is today.
Yeah,
and
it seems like a smooth line in hindsight, but it's
right,
not.
It's not. At all. Yeah. Right. Something that I wanted a quick reaction from you about, because, you know, we track these transporter missions and we know from your book and other reporting, you know, SpaceX sort of abandoned that Falcon 1 early on, and that would have been a small satellite launcher. And now we see the small satellite market, you know, Wall Street banks are saying it's a tens of billions of dollar market. We are seeing rocket startups pop up to serve it. And then we see SpaceX come in with these transporter missions. And when I'm tracking these missions, it's even hard to know what payloads are going on them. There's so many. And they are taking a big chunk of that small satellite market. Do you think Elon regrets not doing the Falcon 1 and, you know, transporter missions, these rideshare missions are sort of that sell for that?
I don't think he regrets not doing Falcon 1 now just because of where things have ended up so well. I mean, we've gotten into a weird spot where, and I don't even think on Elon's best day he really would have thought this is happening. I mean, SpaceX has ended up lapping the field so dramatically that yes, now like all these, the small launchers, even though we have this demand to put so many satellites up, it's just the economics look so strange. It's a strange situation, but I think same thing. If this is all going to play out in the most optimistic way possible, even though SpaceX has this huge advantage in kilogram to orbit cost per kilogram, we're going to need just tons of rockets. So somebody else is going to have to figure this out. And Rocket Lab, you know, has got sort of like the frequency, getting that down pretty good now, and reliability, and is obviously going to a bigger rocket. And so, but yes, it is, it's a strange turn of events. But I just think there's no way if we're going to send up 100,000 satellites in the next decade, not even SpaceX can do it all, unless Starship ends up being just, you know, as spectacular as people hope.
Well, that's a good segue then, because in the past week or two, we've all been like looking at this Starship date, this orbital flight test is on the horizon. It's, you know, this big moment for SpaceX, but also for NASA and also for the space industry as a whole. Ashley, you've been tracking SpaceX for so long. You remember the days when not even bringing the Falcon home was possible, quote unquote. And then after they landed the rocket, then the narrative was, oh, you can't refly that. That's a used rocket. So now we're past that. And we're, you know, all that technology and what they've learned from Falcon 9 and Dragon reusing those vehicles. Now we have Starship. And, you know, a lot of us think that it is this paradigm shifting vehicle. And I mean, for someone who's been tracking SpaceX for so long, like what's your view and outlook of this vehicle? Is it going to be this big game changer that people think it is? Do you think it's, you know, is it going to be developed as fast as Falcon 9? Or are they going to face, you know, issues with it?
First of all, look, I mean, if any of this math checks out on the price that they're talking about to actually fly this commercially, then you're talking about just a new era of putting stuff in space. You know, this is like going from dial up to fiber optic cable, you know, and it would unlock just everybody's hopes and dreams. And then there's this huge part of me that would have, it's weird because like SpaceX really has always really like risen to the occasion. I mean, whether you like Elon or hate him, I mean, you just cannot deny the success of this company, and things always seem to take a little longer, but that's kind of normal for aerospace. I mean, if you were going to trust anybody at this point to get right. it right, it would be,
if you're going to gamble on anyone to do the thing,
it's going to be
a safe bet. Yeah.
It's going to be them, right? I mean, it's gotten a little out of hand just at the pace at which they're going compared to sort of everybody else. So
you can't track the milestones fast enough. And, you know, I remember Falcon Heavy. I worked, that was my last like mission on the beat. And I was one of the people that was like, nah, there's no way this goes on the first day. No way. And they did it somehow on the first day. They missed the first window. It was like 2 hours, and then they hit it on the first day. And they've launched multiple Falcon Heavies since. And, you know, Elon likes to do this dance, song and dance about, oh yeah, this is going to blow up. This isn't going to work. You know, he's setting expectations. Elon went to South by Southwest before Falcon Heavy and told everyone it was going to blow up. And then NASA was worried. Everyone was worried. Starship is a different story here. And we haven't heard that narrative. And I've been seeing tweets from Elon. Oh, it's ready to launch. It's ready to launch. So, you know, let's see what happens next week. Ashley, have you visited Starbase yet or planning to?
I haven't, which is criminal. You know, I spent the last 5 years while I was doing this book. I mean, I went to launch sites in India, New Zealand, French Guiana, Alaska, you know, Ukraine to like hit in. Wait,
not to your own backyard.
Right. It's just not, I just haven't yet. Part of it was because I was on this different path that was very much not purposely not a space. It was not the billionaire path. I wanted to go do like the Wild West of space.
Yeah, of course.
And then, but now, you know, now I want to dig back in. It seems like a good time. No, so I desperately want to get there.
I'm hoping to head down myself next weekend. So yeah, I think that Starship is going to get some national coverage, which I'm excited about.
I think it has to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Artemis, especially if there's a big Artemis tie-in and everything like that. Now, you know, Ashley, I mentioned before that your book comes out May 9th. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, please.
Awesome.
Go buy many of them.
I think that people have been waiting since your Elon book for another Ashley Vance book. So I think that people are going to be stoked on it. And I'm excited to dive into it myself and see some of these interesting stories. Because, you know, you hear about these guys on, you know, launch coverage, space reporting. But I think the kind of inside story that people are looking for is going to be in these pages. And I'm really excited about that. Some other stuff I wanted to ask you about. I think a year or two ago, there was mentioned that there might be a TV show from your Elon book. Is that still happening?
Yeah. Well, yes. HBO, we are on script 4 of 6. So that one is really like the story of, it's a, you know, a drama, not a documentary, but it's a drama of sort of nothing to the Falcon 1. So, you know, for people who are my age, like the Gilligan's Island of space, but Hugh's very close to the book and to reality, just with a little TV magic in there. And then also for HBO, I've been filming a documentary for the last 5 years while I was reporting this book on sort of the rise of commercial space, similar to the book of more like the Wild West kind of side of things. And
that
one is scheduled to come out next year if the gods are with me.
That's really exciting, Ashley. I think we're all waiting for your book to come out. I want to wish you a congratulations on your new book. And I'm excited. I love film and television, so I'm excited to see these projects. And especially a drama about SpaceX, because, you know, there's not enough drama.
I've been helping with the scripts and read them all. That one's going to be good. I just need that to see the light of day, because it'll be amazing. Be the closest thing to actually being there, you know, getting to relive it a little bit.
Well, let's hope that Elon could keep his public relations in check until the show comes out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Ashley. And if you're listening, we will be promoting Ashley's book on our Instagram and Twitter. You can find it on Amazon right now if you want and pre-order it. I know pre-orders are important. But yeah, it's going to be another exciting romp. I think we're all very much excited for it. So thank you, Ashley, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. If anyone wants a signed copy, we had like a couple thousand that I did. You just go to my website, ashleyvance.com, and there's some links up there.
Thank you so much, Ashley, and I'll be getting one of those.
Thanks for the time. I appreciate it, man.